gonna join a White Claw, I see.
I'm definitely having a White Claw partial summer.
There you go.
So, you know, it's fun. I know that was last year's thing, but...
Hey, it's still popular.
I'm like the anti-hipster. I do things after they were cool.
Yeah. So this is PCMC. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Bill Gagliardi.
Without the safety net, this is the first time I'm flying solo on any type of media ever. And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of me.
I'm proud of you, too. I'm sure you'll do great. I am so excited about this episode. This was your idea, and I think it's a great one. Tell us about it.
You and I believe, are only a year apart, so we grew up watching the same types of shows.
Yeah.
So Saturday morning cartoons, the well was tapped. Like,
yeah,
you had Hammerman, which was a cartoon about MC Hammer. You had Talking Shoes.
Yes.
Pro Stars, I think it was called. It was Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, and Bo Jackson were all superheroes at some point. So sure,
of course.
It was just IP flowing everywhere. But there was a group of shows that really struck a chord with me and brought me into my adolescence, where I started liking different types of movies. Now, I'm just going to pave the way a little bit. There was one show, I'm not going to name it now, we'll get into it later, where my brother was like, hey, there's a movie of this. So we go down to the local video store, we rent the movie, and we're like, oh, okay, this is a little bit different from the cartoon that was made for kids. 5 minutes into it, a kid's head gets crushed. And
I know what he's talking about.
And later on, there's a gratuitous sex scene. And that's when my mother walks in and is like, shut this off. I was never allowed to watch the cartoon again. And I became a huge fan of those movies when I was a teenager. But yes, to sum it all up, this is movies that were made for adults that had cartoon series strictly for a children fan base.
Right. Cartoons for kids based on completely adult movies that are inappropriate for children to see. Yet somehow they thought, you know what? Let's turn this into a cartoon show. Before we get into it, I just want to give a brief history of the situation that led to these shows we're going to talk about, which is the sort of, I want to give a brief history of Saturday morning cartoons and action figures, because they're actually one and the same. They're the same story. So, okay, in 1969, ABC had a Hot Wheels show, a Hot Wheels cartoon, and people got upset. People complained to the FCC. They said, this is just a big toy commercial. Eventually, the FCC forced ABC to log the show as advertising time instead of entertainment time. And it became a big taboo. No one else did it again. And Congress even passed certain laws that said you can't do that. Cut to the 80s. Now we have these independent UHF stations that are popping up all over the country. They're TV stations that are not networked. So they're not part of ABC, NBC, CBS. They're just independent stations. And they need content. So studios start making basically syndicated series. Series that are produced kind of like movies, where instead of like the way you would do it with a network where you make a pilot and if they like it, they'll pay for more. You basically make a whole season and then try to sell it.
Mm.
And so that's cost a lot of money. Where do they get the money from? They end up getting the money to produce these shows from the toy companies. What had happened was in 1977, Star Wars came out, and Kenner, which was like not the biggest toy company, they took the gamble on Star Wars, where other bigger companies said no, and Kenner's Star Wars figures just like dominated the industry. So all of these toy makers were like, okay, we need to make action figures too, but Star Wars works because there's the Star Wars movies. So to sell these figures, we need shows, we need content, and we've got these stations that are dying for content. So basically, this is the perfect storm that creates what we have. Because also the Reagan administration, all those rules about not having cartoons that are basically commercials are out the window.
Yeah. It's
the Reagan administration, and there's no regulation for anything.
No.
So you start to see, if Star Wars is the first thing, the second thing is kind of like He-Man. It's really just to sell toys. They want to sell the He-Man figures, and so they make the cartoon to go with it. He-Man does crazy for like 5 years. It's selling tons and tons and tons of figures. And now it's a sort of mad dash for what can we turn into a cartoon so we could sell toys for?
Yeah. And you know what? I remember, like, I go back and visit my parents' house, and under one of the staircases in the basement, like, my parents are just Olympic level hoarders when it comes to, oh, this is going to be worth something someday. And it's not. But like, every toy that I've ever collected is in that basement, like, just under the stairs.
Oh my God. And
So many obscure television shows I have toys for.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are from these. And like, when doing the research for this, one of the shows, which I've had plenty, like, play sets for, only had 5 episodes that were sold to the network.
Wow.
So, but you know, when we get into actually naming these and, you know, the big reveals, because I'm sure that people do remember these shows, but just how absurd the adaptations are.
Yeah.
I think we might blow some minds, Mike.
I think so too. Why don't we'll switch on and off. Why don't you go first?
I'll go a little light first, but the one that I was just talking about is Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing is a little bit more on the lighter side because it is a DC Vertigo adaptation, but the 1990 cartoon was more based on the Wes Craven 1981 movie, which starred Adrian Barbeau. I'm going to get a name wrong. Adrian Barbeau.
It was
sexually explicit. It was very violent, and no way in hell were people going to pitch this as a kid's cartoon. But yes, it did have a bunch of toys. It had a major toy line. It had
I had the glow in the dark figure. Do you remember the glow in the dark one?
Yes.
I love that figure.
There was a playset very similar to the Dagobah playset from the 1980 Star Wars set, where it had the pit that came up, where like the spongy pit where it looks like you're coming up out of the swamp.
Yeah.
But really, there's not much content to go on to actually really talk about it. But yeah, Swamp Thing was one of those, and strictly just to sell toys.
Absolutely. That's what that's what it was. It was the action figure. I mean, there were always toys and there were always dolls. But starting with Star Wars figures, this idea of you can make these tiny little 3/4-inch dolls for boys and just sell them fucking like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Was this new thing, which I'll do another episode about this eventually, but that era is basically dying right now. Yeah. The action figure is all but dead. So it was like, how do we sell these fucking plastic things? I don't know, fucking cartoons, and let's cartoonify it. You know what? I had the toys and never even watched the show. I just liked the toys.
Yeah.
Because they were cool toys, glow in the dark. Anything with that glow in the dark gimmick. There's another one on we're going to talk about that also used the glow-in-the-dark gimmick a lot, and I fucking loved it. Do you know how long the Swamp Thing show even ran for?
5 episodes.
Oh, that's the one?
That's the one that had 5 episodes. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was along the same time they did have a short-lived series. There was another short-lived series last year. They've been trying to make Swamp Thing happen for the longest time.
Right.
Which is amazing because before that, the only comic book adaptation, well, the only major one that DC released was Superman.
Yeah.
So they did Swamp Thing before Batman.
Wow, that's true.
As far as a movie. And I mean, to have Wes Craven as a director for it is pretty awesome. But I mean, I got to go back and watch the whole movie, but just doing research.
I don't remember liking it.
I mean, it's boring, but.
It's super cheap. That Swamp Thing movie.
But that's where I got the influence for this mini, because I originally pitched it to you that it was B-movies or like cult classics that they adapted to it. But then when we got a little bit deeper, it was more mainstream stuff too that really shouldn't be suitable for children.
There's no right to be. There's no right to turn it into a cartoon. All right, so... some of these on my list, I watched. Some of them I didn't. This is one that I didn't watch. I actually, for research of this episode, I watched some of it. From 1986, Rambo, Force of Freedom. This had 65 episodes, which is basically one syndicated season.
Yeah.
Because you would strip them and you'd do one a day, Monday to Friday. And so the premise of the show is you've got Rambo. And he's got Turbo, his friend, who is basically his Q, who makes shit for him. And then you've got Cat, who's a master of disguise. They're on his team. And like, there's an episode with the Loch Ness Monster in it. And what makes this so perfect for this list is the original Rambo movie is about a Vietnam veteran with PTSD.
Yes.
Suffering. It is so dark and serious. And then to give the cartoon a little credit, the second and third movies got into that superhero 1980s Ronald Reagan insanity. Like, mm-hmm. In part one, he's a normal guy. In part two, he's like got that fucking Rocky IV build where he's just a giant and he's fucking just killing. All of the pathos and like the commentary on American war and like all of that is gone. And basically, it's just like, it's a lot like G.I. Joe. And like G.I. Joe, guns are fired, but no one ever gets hit. You know, if a plane goes down, everybody's got a parachute. No one ever really dies.
Now, was this cartoon released before Rambo 3?
It was tied into 2.
It was tied into 2. So yeah. Do you think that this cartoon was the reason why they called it Rambo 3 rather than First Blood 3, Rambo's Big Adventure?
I don't know. I mean, that series has the worst title, the worst titles of any series ever.
Well, you know the last one's called Rambo Last Blood. So yeah. Here we come back.
Which I saw and I did not like. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to like it, but it was so basically racist. I was like, yeah. Fuck, man. It was basically like trying to do Taken with Rambo.
You can't take Rambo.
Yeah, and I liked the last one, John Rambo, from mm-hmm. 2009. That one was actually awesome.
Yeah.
And also the guy who's doing Stallone's voice, he kind of is doing like a Brooklyn accent, but he's not doing Stallone. It's bad. But of course, it was to sell toys.
Oh, yeah. But just to go back into that whole thing of tying, now if a cartoon gets popular, what it does to the actual movie franchise. Look what happened with Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters right. is a more adult movie.
Yeah.
Then it became a very successful cartoon.
Right.
Had an amazing toy line. I still have the firehouse in my parents' house. You know, it's under that, you know, basement step. And then look what happened with Ghostbusters 2.
Right. They're no longer smoking cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
There's very limited adult language. I think shit is the only curse that's in the movie.
Yeah.
They turn the Janine character. They make her look like she does in the cartoon.
Yes.
They really make her the cartoon character.
Mm-hmm.
There's even, I think, a pretty clever reference to the toy line in the movie, which is also the scene with Bobby Brown's cameo, where the Ghostbusters are entering some place and Bobby Brown is the doorman. And he's like, hey, can I have one of those proton packs? My brother really wants one. And Egon's like, the proton pack is not a toy, which is obviously the joke is it was a huge toy that every kid in the 80s had. So, yeah, that's... But I think, you know, that's actually pretty responsible to do, I think, on Ghostbusters' part.
But then there was also Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had their movie, then the cartoon comes out, and then Part 2 comes out, which was a very fun movie, but they take away the weapons, and, like, pretty much anything, like, that was significant about the first movie is gone.
The first one really strikes the tone of the comic. Yes. I love the first movie. I still think it's good. I watched it recently. Mm-hmm. It's a good movie.
Well, there's another one where you based a series off of
toys.
An adult. Well, yeah, you based a series off of toys, but it was an adult IP.
Right. But really, like, they just did an episode of The Toys That Made Us about this. And, mm-hmm. like, the comic was out for a very short time before toys were.
Yeah.
Like, not to discredit the comic, but, like, the toys were the heart of it. And it's where they made their money. Mm-hmm. And it's what drove the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. And I had a ton of them.
Oh, my God. Ninja Turtles are fucking... I'm so jealous that you have in your parents' house all these toys because I don't have any stuff from my childhood. I've had to rebuy everything and I've got a lot of credit card debt.
I think my brother keeps on lying to me that he has the original diecast Voltron and he says that I broke it when I was a toddler. But, I mean, I've never seen it. I want to see the receipts.
Yeah, let's see that shit.
But... Yeah. Well, what are we? I'm up next again?
Yes, sir.
All right. So the other one that I had that I didn't have much knowledge for was Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. This was another one that only lasted for one season. This was in 1991. Most of these, I got to make another point. A lot of these shows were within the span of 8 years from 86 to 94.
Yeah.
That's when, you know, all this was going on as far as we got to sell toys. Attack of the Killer Tomatoes was not really a popular toy line. I do believe that there was a Happy Meal line for it.
Wow. But,
it took place, it was based off of the 1978 B-movie, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, that was just more camp than anything, but again, sexually explicit. But it was similar to the original movie. But one thing that these shows do that isn't in the movies is they always have like a wisecracking sidekick, or they always have like some type of like a, they always either anthropomorphize something that is an object in the movie.
Yeah.
And they're either like wisecracking or adorable or something. So like there's this one good tomato. They also like turned a tomato into a girl that is on the side of the good guys and stuff. But that was one of the more ridiculous ones that lasted longer than Swamp Thing, but shouldn't have.
Wow. I remember, I've never seen the film. I've seen the cartoon.
Mm.
And I feel like the theme song is the most famous thing from it.
Oh, the Attack of the Killer Tomato. that was actually from the original movie.
Yeah.
Which it's wasn't from the
original. Too.
Yes. And this is actually replacing the sequel.
Oh.
Just as far as Wikipedia has told me.
Okay. I remember George Clooney was in the sequel. I've never seen that. Little young George Clooney.
Oh, now I got to watch it. But going back to theme songs, the Swamp Thing theme song, I don't know if you remember it, but it was a parody of Wild Thing. So it's like, Swamp Thing, you are amazing.
Oh, wow, that's bad.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. I suggest to check it out. But when I was listening to it again, I had Henry over at the breakfast table dancing to it. I was like, well, this is amazing.
Yeah, you got to get him those toys.
I already have them.
All right, so my next one's actually, it's two entries because they tried this twice. RoboCop, the animated series from 1988. That one was more like the movies. Well, it didn't have, the movie RoboCop is super violent, but also very satirical. The cartoon had a little bit of that. I was actually impressed by the pilot to the cartoon. It only lasted 12 episodes, and it had some satire. Do you remember the big robot that was like his competition? Like it kills that guy in that crazy scene where he goes. There's a scene in the first episode of the cartoon where they try to use that robot to like direct traffic, and it goes crazy. And I was like, this is actually a funny, this is kind of satirical. All the guns shoot lasers, though. If there's bullets, they don't hit anybody. Nobody shoots bullets at people.
No.
So that only lasted 12 episodes, but then they tried it again 10 years later in 1998, and that one lasted a season and lasted 41 episodes, and that was called RoboCop Alpha Command. And that one is super influenced by Batman the Animated Series. It has the whole look of Batman the Animated Series. But it also turns RoboCop's all of a sudden wisecracking and funny. And he's also like Inspector Gadget. Like he can do any fucking crazy thing.
Now,
it's actually pretty cool. I liked it.
In that one, is he the main character? I see a lot of these where they have
him a team.
Yeah. So like it's kind of like a Captain America, Captain Planet type of thing where it's like, oh, you know, once they're into a pinch.
Right.
And RoboCop has to come out and, you know, he's the deus ex machina of it.
Well, the pilot begins with this other character and she's like a special agent, and they partner her with RoboCop, who's kind of like, it's a little bit in the future from the original series. So like he has to be like, he's like woken up. It's a little like Captain America. Like he's like back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just wisecracking. And so, yeah, it was, again, I think that's to sell more figures. Like you have like a little team, you know what I mean? Like the Ninja Turtles or the Ghostbusters. Yeah. You know, you had the Alpha Command, which was the people with RoboCop. I actually think that these are solid shows. But again, what's ridiculous is the original RoboCop movie is so, it's so incredibly violent. I mean, like the first scene where Murphy is killed, and you know, before they take what's left of him and turn him into RoboCop, is just brutal. Just the dad from That 70s Show just filling him with bullets. It's brutal. And to see that scene and go, yeah, this is a kid's show.
Yeah. I mean, not even that part. That part's brutal, but then, like, there's, like, also the guy who just gets destroyed in acid.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, that's the good dad from that 70s show.
Yeah. Bitches, like, leave.
Yeah. Any Paul Verhoeven property. Wait, actually, there was a Starship Troopers cartoon as well.
Was it really?
Yeah. Did Paul Verhoeven was a hot commodity in the 90s.
Yeah.
They needed those cartoons.
I love RoboCop. I've never seen I think I've seen two. I've never seen three or the remake.
Three is a cartoon. There's like some type of culturally insensitive samurai cyborg that he has to fight. The remake is pretty good. Bryan Cranston's in it. He's in most of the remakes these days.
Yeah.
So
the remake from the trailer looked like it didn't have any irony to it, that it was like a superhero movie.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was very forgettable. So
yeah. You know, yeah.
It's like, oh, this happened. And then, you know, everybody just forgot about it.
Yeah. All right, man. What do you got?
This one was strictly for the toys. I really didn't even know it existed. I guess I saw the movie originally because I started collecting the toys was Police Academy.
All the toys were so good.
Yeah. I remember just either Mattel or Kenner, whatever you bought a toy, there was always like that tiny little catalog pamphlet where you flip through it and then it's like, oh, cool, here's Mighty Max. Oh, cool, here's like Swamp Thing, whatever. And the Police Academy toys always looked like a lot of fun. Like they had like some helicopters, some boats and stuff. So they looked a little goofy. Zed, which was Bobcat Goldthwait's character, had like three different toys of just like different silly faces he made. Yeah,
they all had like a gag to them.
Yeah,
I had the handcuffs that were literally hands. They were literally like plastic hands.
I remember though. Yeah,
and I remember one morning when I was a child, my mother woke me up for like elementary school, but she put the handcuff in her sleeve, mm-hmm. and like touched me with it, and then like she dropped it, like her hand fell off, and I screamed because I was a child. Yeah, I'm in therapy now, but that. but those toys were super fun.
But let's look at the original material it came from. The first Police Academy is homophobic, racist. And it's like the Animal House of civil service movies.
You know, I've actually not seen any of those.
The first one's good. The second one's all right. And then the main villain of the second one becomes a cop. So
sure, of course.
And there was this one, like flash, like before YouTube, like these like flash shorts that from these Staten Islanders called Stupid Heroes, and they make the point. They're like, there's six Police Academy movies. They graduate after the first one. It's like, why do they keep on going Police Academy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6? They should just be called Police the Movie.
Yeah, that's true. Did the same cast, was Gutenberg in all of them?
Gutenberg left, I believe, after the fourth one. He held on for a while.
Is Bobcat in all of them?
No. He comes in the second one. He's the villain in the second one. He's a gang leader. He's Zed.
Oh, really?
And then he comes in The New Recruits, part three.
Oh. See, when I think of that, all I ever think about is Bobcat.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, that's all I have on Police Academy. I'm just inching towards the grand one.
Big one. So the next one I have, this is a show. I actually don't think there were toys for this, believe it or not. This is a show I've talked about before. It's Tales from the Crypt Keeper.
Yes.
From 1993, and then it was revived again in 1999. There's 39 episodes. I guess it was probably riding the wave of, like, Goosebumps.
This one I could really get behind because it is just the kids' version of a very entertaining horror show for adults. And something that, like, kids and adults could talk about, but then, you know, it's like, hey, come see Demon Knight or Bordello of Blood.
Exactly. Yeah, the original comics are pretty wild, violently. Yeah. And then you've got the HBO series, which had a lot of sexual content and violence. And, you know, it's a horror anthology. So it was sort of like spooky stories for kids.
Yeah.
But using the same voice actor to play the Crypt Keeper.
Mm.
Originally, they wanted the Crypt Keeper segments to be live action and use the same puppet. But they found that was going to terrify children.
Well, I remember, like, I didn't have cable growing up, but we had some friends who also had a Technodrome playset. So, like, I was over there a lot just, like, playing with that. So
I got that for my communion.
Oh, man. I would have been over that house. Probably would have broke it by accident. Felt really bad about it because that's what I did to my friends who no longer talks to me. I wonder why. He had HBO, so they would play Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah.
And that intro would always scare the hell out of me. Like, once it got down to the bottom of the crypt, I knew that the coffin was coming, and I would hide behind the couch like, no, he's going to pop out.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. All that music. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, the Crypt Keeper scared me as a kid, so I completely understand why they didn't do the live-action puppet.
There was also, I'm trying to find it. There was a Crypt Keeper Saturday morning like game show that was basically like Legends of the Hidden Temple, but with the Crypt Keeper. That was wild. CBS was like, you know what? We got this IP. We got to use it. All right. So that's Tales from the Crypt Keeper.
Corpse equals money. Corpse is cash.
Yeah.
Speaking of just cash grabs, this is kind of just like a toss-up. I don't think, well, toys weren't for a series of these. Two different things. One being the Street Fighter Mortal Kombat franchises. More so the Mortal Kombat franchise. There was Mortal Kombat Defenders of the Realm. I can't blame that for happening. It was an extremely popular video game. Like,
right.
A lot of these that I've been going at were cult classics.
Right.
You know, like, stuff that not everybody knows about. Everybody knew about Mortal Kombat, so why not make a kid's... Right. Like, they knew kids were playing the video game anyway.
Right.
So, you know, ABACABB is the blood code. I know that from when I was 7. So you can't blame that. But another just blatant cash grab was in 1994. Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber all had cartoon adaptations of them. So it's like,
yeah,
Jim Carrey's the biggest thing right now. And okay, The Mask was a little bit more geared towards kids, but not really.
Yeah.
But not Ace Ventura and not Dumb and Dumber.
No.
And those, all of them had very short-lived cartoons.
On at the same time. And all those films were out at the same time. That was when Jim Carrey just ruled the world.
Yeah.
I remember I watched Ace Ventura a lot, the cartoon, and I watched Dumb and Dumber. I don't know if I ever watched the Mask cartoon.
That was the only one that I was like, oh, this makes sense because, you know, the Mask.
Right, it was a comic.
Yes.
But you got to think, like, in Ace Ventura, like, he gets a blowjob in, like, the first 10 minutes.
Oh, that's what she was doing to him?
Yes. Go back and watch it now as a man. You know, they're... You know, of course, we now know that the ending is just nothing but a big transphobic bonanza. And they're like, yep, this is cartoon material. See, what's weird is, like, you know, when you adapt things, the reason you usually adapt something is because there's a built-in audience. But they can't have been thinking, oh, yeah, RoboCop fans will watch the cartoon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it is a weird jump to be like, oh, yeah, people who like Tales from the Crypt, they're going to love this Saturday morning cartoon. It's almost not intuitive, but fuck, I mean, I guess.
But that's the thing. The built-in fan base, like, is probably, like, a bunch of 17-year-old kids who aren't going to wake up until noon anyway.
Right, exactly. Exactly. I remember I liked the... Of course, none of them were voiced by Jim Carrey.
No.
Yeah, I liked Ace Ventura. I liked the look of that show.
It was a little bit like that, and the Dumb and Dumber. There was a promo for it on the VHS for Dumb and Dumber, and it did seem like a little bit more farsighty, like a very, very slapsticky type of, like, kind of like the old, like, Asterix and Obelix comics they looked like, which, I mean, was kind of cool, but again, like, who's going to watch it? It was on for like 5 episodes.
Yeah, I remember they made a lot out of the dog car. That was a big thing for them in the cartoon.
You got it.
Yeah, I mean, that's cartoon written all over it.
Yeah.
All right, so my next one, I can see why they turned it into a cartoon, but when you look at the source material, it's really not appropriate. Is James Bond Jr.?
I loved James Bond Jr. I had a CD player that like had some type of pistol that was like hidden in it, but like the disc was also like some type of like blade that you like fly around. Yeah. It was very dangerous. But no, I ate up all of the merchandise for James Bond Jr.
65 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, even though he's James Bond Jr., he's James Bond's nephew. Because in cartoon world, everyone has like nephews.
Oh, of course.
He's like at a boarding school, and his roommate is IQ, the grandson of Q. Everybody's connected to people from the James Bond movie.
It's like a Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Jaws is one of the villains. The main villains are Scum, and Scum stands for Saboteurs and Criminals United in Mayhem. So the bad guy, I think, is Master Scum, or no, the Scum Lord. The Scum Lord. But what's really weird is, like, he's doing an English accent, but he sounds like Mike Myers' Simon character from SNL. He's like, hello, I'm James Bond Jr. Like, it's, like, horrible voice acting. It's like, come on, dude. Like, put a little smoothness into this.
Just go to school. let your uncle do the work, please.
I know, and everybody knows. I don't think these shows know what spies are. Because everyone's like, oh, you're James Bond's nephew. And it's like, you know what? If you're a really famous spy, then you're not a good spy. Everybody's like awestruck by him being James Bond's nephew.
And also, which James Bond? I think this came off of the Timothy Dalton era.
91. Who fucking knows?
That was between Dalton and Brosnan. So, yeah, there wasn't a James Bond for a while. So they were just like, okay, let's junior him up.
Yeah. And it's like the theme song's like, James Bond Jr.
Oh yeah, all of these theme songs slap. So
oh yeah, that was like the main ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
It was like good theme song, figures. Let's do this. What do you have?
Yeah, I'm gonna go for it because this is the one that just does not belong. So I opened up with this. I mean at the time there was probably 6 fans. Now the franchise has 20 fans, maybe.
Yeah.
Because of the cartoon, because the cartoon was actually a little successful. Yeah. And that was Toxic Crusaders, based off of the trauma hit, The Toxic Avenger. If you don't know what The Toxic Avenger is, it's the first superhero from New Jersey. Yes. Melvin Ferd, later named Melvin Junko, who was fell into a vat of toxic waste.
Yeah.
And became a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength.
Yep.
Now, the movie is a trauma movie. Trauma is a company from Hell's Kitchen that is like a single walk-up office that has some of the most tasteless, but I mean, when I was a teenager, most beautiful movies.
Right. It's kind of like Roger Corman stuff, but more gross and violent. And
yeah. Gratuitous isn't the word.
Right.
Is it the first one
or the second one where there's like a 5-minute scene where he's pulling somebody's intestines out and it just keeps going and going and going?
It's the third one. But the the second and third one were filmed in the same weekend.
Of course.
They just split it into 2 movies.
Oh, they're so cheap. It's so
Yeah. But that's what the Toxic Avenger was. Like I said, the first 5 minutes, the protagonist run over a kid for the fun of it. And they're like, oh, he's still alive. And they run back over and crush his head.
Right.
Gratuitous nudity.
It's all about being shocking.
Yes, exactly. And in an interview with Lloyd Kaufman, who is the president of Troma, he was like, Turtles did it. They sold a lot of toys. So I gave it a shot.
Right, because you've got the whole mutant thing.
Yeah.
And, they were a lot like Turtle Toys. And, you know what? Of everything on the list, I think it was a solid series. I had almost all of the toys. They were all good. Again, like these other shows we're talking about, they give him a team. So it's not just Toxie alone. It's these other people. Mm-hmm. They would come with these little glow-in-the-dark, like, monster things. They would come in these little canisters.
Yes.
Toxic waste canisters. They were, like, I mean, they were very... I don't know who made them, but they were a lot like the Ninja Turtle toys.
Yes.
Like a lot.
Yeah.
But they were really fucking good.
Mm-hmm. Very
similar. Now I want to go on eBay and look all this shit up and see if I can get some fucking Toxie toys.
The villain's name, just like Scum, was Dr. Kill-Em-Off.
Sure, it must have been like Russian or something.
The other characters from there was No Zone, who was a test pilot who flew into the ozone layer, and there was like somehow there was like pepper involved. So his power is sneezing, but he also has like a wheel for a leg. What else? Headbanger is an evil scientist and a surfer guy who are like a conjoined.
Yeah.
There's Junkyard, who's just a talking dog. And I forget what the, was it Warzone or like whatever the, there was a soldier character. But
Yes.
Not too far from the original series, but again, absolutely. Like if there's anyone on this list that should absolutely not be for children, it's this, because what's going to happen is they're going to grow up and then they're going to go to Kim's video in the city and they're going to go start diving down the rabbit hole of what trauma is. And they're going to get into Sergeant Kabuki Man. They're going to get into Class of Nukem High. They're going to get into Trauma's War. And it's
Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet. And it's and you're just going to.
Good for them.
You know what?
As long as they're not children while they're watching it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I was a child when I first watched it, and it. I'm not the same person, Mike. I don't think I would be on this podcast today if it wasn't for Toxic Crusaders.
No, I agree. I agree. I think I had that experience where I was like, "All right, let me watch the movie now." And this was the 80s where they didn't give a shit about, like, you know, I'd go to the fucking mom and pop video store and I'd rent it for $2,
mm-hmm.
and I'd watch it. And I mean, there's also like gratuitous boobs all over that movie. Mm-hmm. I was just like, what the fuck is this? That's awesome. I was just looking up the toys. They were cool. It was a cool series. It was good. I mean, yeah. I don't remember the show at all. I really just remember the toys.
So like I was saying, when I was a teenager, if it had trauma on the label, I was buying it.
Yeah.
So they came out with the DVD of it. And all I remember from the show in more recent memory is every 3 seconds, they would just say that you're a hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. Like somehow they would shoehorn that into the conversation, like every, I would say 45 to 90 seconds. But so there was not really much to a plot, just that, you know, this is what this is.
Yeah. So my last one is actually a big one. From 1989 to 1991, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice was a fantastic adaptation.
It's a fantastic cartoon. I don't know if it's a fantastic adaptation.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give you that.
Basically, they remove the Maitland characters, the Gina Davis, Alec Baldwin characters, and they make Beetlejuice the Maitland characters. They make him her ghost friend that helps her, even though in the movie, he's the villain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he's grabbing Gina Davis's vagina and he's trying to marry Lydia and she's like 15. To then turn that into a cartoon is very wild.
Insulting Alec Baldwin's model, saying, nice fucking model, and then grabbing himself. Thusly. Right.
It's just, you think back to the 80s and it's like, what was going on? But, you know, it was the toys and I had a lot of those toys.
Yes. Before the Beetlejuice cartoon, there were actual Beetlejuice the movie
toys. Right.
I had the carousel head one. I had the grave where like he could disappear and stuff. But those were for the movie. That wasn't for the – that right. I know definitely there was a McDonald's line for the cartoon series.
And then he had friends, right? There was the Spider Woman.
Mm-hmm.
There was the French skeleton guy.
Yes. Yeah, that went on for quite a while because I remember there was an episode for the French skeleton guy.
Yeah.
Like he had his own episode who looks a lot like the villain in Coco.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I recently watched the pilot in preparation for this episode. And the pilot is it's Lydia's birthday and Beetlejuice needs to get her a present. Mm-hmm. So he starts babysitting like monster children. This is the pilot. And it's like, well, they're like best friends now.
It's like, wait a second, there was like 20 years that we just missed out on. Can we like
it's wild.
Well, isn't the musical, aren't they friends in the musical or no?
The second act had like they're more friendly in the musical.
Okay.
But it's definitely the movie. I love the musical. I'm sad that it's gone. I mean, Beetlejuice itself is a weird property. Just the movie alone is a very weird property.
Mm-hmm.
And it lended itself to animation well.
You do anything with Tim Burton, it's going to animate. I believe, I mean, this wasn't a cartoon, but Pee-wee's Big Adventure was before Pee-wee's Playhouse. And, like, I mean, that was like a live-action cartoon.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But again, that's something that was more for adults that then had a target audience for children.
Yeah.
Oh, I should have wrote that one down. That would have been good.
So you had a really fun idea on how we should cap off this episode.
Yes, and since you are a master of film, and you are very well-knowledged in a large library of film, what do you think are some movies or some franchises that didn't get the chance to be adapted into a child's program that should not have been?
Well, I actually put a lot of work into it. I have two ideas, and you have some ideas too, right?
I do.
All right, so the first one I came up with is Predator, The Adventures of Dutch. So Dutch, which was Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, he's going to be voiced by Dave Coulier.
Oh, before you go any further, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but is this on the rules of between 1986 and 1994?
Yes.
Okay, all right, so Dave Coulier, good.
Yeah, so basically Dutch, after the events of the first Predator movie, he goes like now, like there's predators everywhere basically. Mm-hmm. And he just goes around the world chasing the predator various predators. And of course he has a team. He's got like fun sidekicks. Maybe we bring somehow, even though he died, we bring back Jesse the Body Ventura. Just bring people back.
I mean, yeah, sure. You can make the rules, but like now let me ask you something, because Arnold Schwarzenegger is famous for his one-liners.
Yeah.
Now, is it going to be Dave Coulier doing Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners, or is he going to be doing Joey Gladstone one-liners? Like instead of "you're one ugly motherfucker," is he going to go "cut it out"?
It's going to be like, think about like in the Ghostbusters cartoon, how like the Peter Venkman tried to have the Bill Murray energy, but clearly couldn't like hit on women. So like it'll be kid friendly, but it'll try to be that Dutch well, it's gonna be the Arnold accent for sure. Coulier's okay. Gonna do the act. You got to. But there's gonna be a lot of it's gonna be very lively. It's gonna have, you know, humor to it. And the way I see the toy line is you do that, you know how like every Batman toy line does this crazy thing where like they do a million different Batman costumes, which is ridiculous because that's not how it works.
I had like one weird copper Batman for some reason. But
there's like blue Batman who goes underwater and orange Batman who like goes into the sun or whatever the fuck. Like we just have a bunch of different predators. Kind of like the aliens line, you have Operation mm-hmm. Alien.
Yeah.
Like there was like they would match them up with other animals like spider alien, donkey alien. Like, you remember those?
Yes.
It'll be like that. I actually have a bunch of those still. It'll be like that. But with predators. So that's my first idea. And you know what? That could have happened. That easily could have happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which goes into mine. I don't know where to start first. I have three ideas. Let's go with the one that makes the most sense, Evil Dead Defenders of the Necronomicon.
I love it. Good title, too.
Oh, of course. Like, I mean, and this, see, the thing is, let's go with 1993. This is when Universal had the property for Army of Darkness. Since then, there's been some weird stuff going on with the franchise because you had Ash vs. Evil Dead, which
I thought was a good show.
It was a great show. But it does not acknowledge Army of Darkness at all. It's just the events that happen in the cabin, and then that's it.
There's also a bunch of video games that aren't canon.
Yeah. Fistful of Boomstick, Hail to the King, and Regeneration, I think it was the last one.
Yeah.
Which leads me to the casting. Bruce Campbell has to already do it. I think that there's something in his contract that he always has to be Ash.
Right.
So... He's down for it, of course. But you're going to have a crew like how you said in RoboCop. So like, well, yeah, let's throw Shelley Nobe in there. And
yeah.
What this does is this is Sliders. Remember the show Sliders back in the 90s where they just go into different dimensions and stuff? Or like it's going to be like a Sliders or a Quantum Leap where they're going to be time traveling, whatever. They're going to fight Deadites. They're going to have some wacky adventures. And the Necronomicon is actually part of the crew. He's going to talk to them. Okay.
Oh, now, my God. I love it.
If we're going to go in the rules of just voice actors from the 90s, I have two choices for the voice of Necronomicon. Either you have Lorenzo Music, and he's going to have that Peter Venkman energy or that Garfield energy, like, oh, God, I just hate Mondays. Or he's going to be the complete opposite, and he's going to be like Aladdin's genie. Now, Robin Williams will not be signed on to this because, I mean, he's going to be a hard get.
Right.
So you get Dan Castellaneta, who did Genie in Return of Jafar.
So but, does the Necronomicon like float? Like, how does it move around?
Yeah, and he's gonna float like all stupid, like.
Because I'm imagining him like Slimer in Ghostbusters cartoon, like who ate all the pie? Necronomicon, and then like just a giant floating flesh book with like cake frost on it.
Me? No, I didn't do that. Yeah, you know what though? Like, because it's like, yeah, he's got bookends, so like he could flap, but no, let's put like a kind of like a green glow around him or something that he's always like, but there's always sparkles behind him too, like of if course, he gets real fast.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, Evil Dead Defenders of Necronomicon, that's a layup right there.
And think of the action figures.
The action figures would be great. I mean, I had the McFarlane toy. Like, see, that's the thing. McFarlane just destroyed all of that because they did the lifelike toys for all this, and you probably have a couple on your wall.
Yeah.
Behind you. Yeah, of course. Like you know, Ash's chainsaw. You could do.
And you do a bunch of different arms. Just everything you could put on his arm, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, Henrietta Nobby, the like main bad from part two.
Yeah.
Like, I'll swallow your soul. Like, you have an extendable neck and stuff. Because they all have to have a function.
Oh, the cabin playset?
With the door popping up.
Yes.
Yeah. And a tree that rapes you.
Yeah, the rape tree.
Not okay, Mike.
Oh, man. All right, I've got one more, but I'm pretty proud of it.
All right.
Okay, it's called Jaws, the Animated Series.
I love it. So, sign me up.
All right. So one day on the beach, Chief Brody finds a magical amulet that allows him to control the shark. It also gives the shark the power to speak. So together, Chief Brody, the shark, and Quint, who somehow survived being eaten by the shark and forgave him, are always going on adventures against this evil corporation that's always trying to pollute the beach. The shark will be voiced, of course, by Frank Welker, who's Megatron and a million other things.
Yes.
And also in the first episode, at some point, the shark says to Chief Brody, "Hey, if you want, you could just call me Jaws, if it's easier. Like, it's less confusing. Just call me Jaws." And that's Jaws, the Animated Series.
I love it. And sure, you could, like, it could come out every single summer, like how Salute Your Shorts and Hey Dude did.
Yes.
Yeah, scare the hell out of it. Like, do it before Shark Week, so you know you don't take all the attention away from it.
Yeah, and you know you kind of like what they did again with Ghostbusters and Slimer. You take Jaws and you make him the star, or even like the Godzilla cartoon. The shark is the good guy now, and Chief Brody and Quint, and they're gonna fucking keep the beach clean.
And the shark could fly too.
Yeah, he could do anything.
Chief Brody ate all the cake? Jaws.
Who ate all the cake? Jaws.
All right. Well, I guess going into the talking animals thing, my next one is The New Adventures of the Crow. The New Adventures of the Crow. All right. So based on Jay Obar's The Crow series, but this will be roughly around the first character, Eric Draven.
Uh-huh.
But it'll be more like a Captain Planet type of thing.
Okay. Where
it follows Sarah, the girl who was the main character in the movie, just like getting into things or like, you know, just like going and finding the seedy underbelly of the city.
Yeah.
But when she's in a clutch, her crow friend, who's named, let's just go Crowy.
Sure.
Who's a wisecracking crow.
Of course.
I was going to cast John DiMaggio as the
Oh, perfect. Crow.
But, I mean, if we're going to the 90s, let's do Estelle Getty.
She'd do it.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. So Estelle Getty's going to be the crow. And So she's going to be the one like pecking eyes out and stuff. But once push comes to shove, then Eric Draven's the Crow comes out, and he's a little goofy, like goofy RoboCop.
Right.
Cleans up house, probably sure. Does his, like, he always like alluded to like Poe and stuff. And
yeah,
he would do that. And then,
how are you going to deal with the guns? Because these shows always have to figure out a way to deal with guns. Like in the droids cartoon, there are no blasters. Everybody has like wand lasers, but not lightsabers, like just like wands that shoot lasers. In RoboCop, they made everything laser guns instead of bullets. How are you going to deal with guns in your Crow animated series?
Ooh, oh man, I didn't even think of this. And that
guns would really, are a big part of that series.
Yeah, and it would be very insensitive to the Lee family. So,
yeah.
Oh man, this is a hard one. I gotta get back to you on that. Well, okay. let's start with knives.
Yes.
And work away, like, because like these are just low level thugs. The cops got all the guns off the streets.
Maybe you could do like the second Ninja Turtles movie, and just like whatever's around, like do the Jackie Chan thing, like whatever's around you use.
Yeah, they like, always caught him like not ready. Like, oh shit, this girl and her wisecracking crow that talks here, who just came in and ate all of our cake.
Right.
And so let's pick up a pipe.
Or like, oh, let's use some salami as nunchucks.
Exactly. Or that really cheesy pizza that, oh god.
Yeah. Oh man.
Very delicious looking pizza.
well, I think that's a great idea.
Thank you.
And again, good toys. You get a lot of good toys out of that.
Yeah, you get a lot of good toys. You get, like, regenerating, healing Crow.
Yeah.
And then my last one, I'm kind of torn with this. It's Warriors Come Out and Play.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense because you have a lot of different toys to do from. Like, you got the baseball Furies. Yeah. You got the Warriors. You got like that
very color skating
one. Yeah. It takes place in Coney Island.
Yeah.
Now the title alone makes you want to make it like the Muppet Babies.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so it's just, but make them like kind of like tweens or like teenagers. They're all in the schoolyard. Yeah. It's all like schoolyard battles and
so
stuff.
So they're a little young. So it's pre the movie.
Yeah. It'd be pre the movie.
Okay.
So, it would just be all kid actors. Maybe Silas will be the principal of the school.
Sure.
Voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson or something.
Sure, of course.
Kochi, since he was the warlord, would be, like, one of their teachers.
Yeah.
But, like, Swan and Ajax and everybody would just, like, be students getting into fights with, like, Vermin and all those guys.
And
have a baseball game with the baseball Furies.
Of course. The guy who actually says Warriors come out and play, he could
was
be
in
like
the Crow. Oh, sorry.
I was gonna say he could be like your kind of like your bully. You know,
yeah.
He could kind of be like the bully in school.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the theme song comes in because it's gonna be like one of those '90s theme songs, but it's gonna start off with that line like "Warriors, come out and play."
Yeah.
And it's like one of the toys is the kid with spray can action.
Yeah.
Swan's got like changeable vests he could have.
Yeah. Warriors action figures, new from Bandai.
Exactly.
This could have happened. You know, we're talking about this. These meetings could have actually happened at some point. This has been a really fun episode. It was such a great idea. Thank you for coming on and bringing this fun energy. I'm going to go now on eBay and look up Toxic Crusader toys.
See what I can get.
This is PCMC. This is a podcast about pop culture, TV, movies, books, video games, and of course, cartoons. Bill Gagliardi, thank you so much for being here. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.